Happy International Women's Month to all the women out there, and welcome to Trade Talk Africa, our podcast on trade, investment opportunities and trends across the continent. My name is Kabelo Ramathisile, a practicing attorney in South Africa and founder and director of the legal practice Ramathisile Rumo Inc. As always, I never ride alone. I'm with my incredible co-host, Amanda Gabagambe, an economist in Uganda and founder and director of Bethel Advisors. In celebration of International Women's Month, we champion and pioneer a spectacular woman of our time, Ama Jiambo. Ama Jiambo is a UK-Ghana board advisor and management consultant advising C-level and board executives of large organizations on how to better engage with SMEs, startups, and innovation ecosystems in Africa for mutual growth. She is the co-founder of B2B entrepreneurship development firm, Scale Up Africa, which designs and implements cutting-edge programmatic solutions with a focus on value chains, ESG, impact, skills development, gender, tourism, agribusiness, and tech for large organizations. I mean, she has been featured on Forbes, Entrepreneur.com, BBC, Africa.com, and of course, our Trade Talk Africa. She is passionate about enterprise education and investment for entrepreneurs in Africa and the diaspora. Thank you for joining us, Ama.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks, Ama. A good place to start would be for us to hear about your work at Scale Up Africa. I'm based in East Africa, you're based in West Africa, and Kabelo is based in South Africa. So we don't want to assume that it is known what you do. Kindly please tell us more about your work.
Thanks so much, Amanda. So we are a business development agency, and we advise large corporations and foundations like MasterCard, like Access Bank, to really understand how it is to implement entrepreneurship and innovation-related programming to connect small businesses with large-scale businesses. So that's primarily what we do, just advisory, we design programs, we implement programs, and we really try and connect the SME ecosystem to the larger resource holders, i.e. the foundations and corporations.
Africa is awash with ideation, with innovation, with startups, and so many programs seeking to make a difference. What do you hope your key differentiator to be, and what should it deliver?
Well, we try and take a holistic approach to problems. And so when we go into a client with resources, we try and find and understand where they are in terms of their strategies and their priorities. And we try and link that to some of our potential opportunities in engaging with our SME community. And so we like to think that we try and take a more holistic approach to problems for both SMEs and the larger clients that we engage.
What was your motivation for starting Scale Up Africa?
Well, I've been working in Africa for about 9 years now, and having lived and worked here for several years, I realized that there was a huge gender disparity, and interacting with entrepreneurs daily and investors regularly, it became very apparent that there was a need for a more gender-focused approach and a more value chain-based approach to solving problems, as I mentioned earlier. And so with our sort of entrepreneurial hats on and our problem-solving skills, we decided that this would be a really good way to position ourselves in the marketplace to really bridge the gap between big businesses and large and small-scale businesses to solve some of our challenges. So that was really the motivation.
Okay, great. You talked about connecting the resource holders to smaller businesses. What are the benefits for that, and which of the two is the net winner?
It's a win-win situation for both parties, I feel. SMEs, you know, benefit from the large scale of corporations and their sheer size. And the large corporations adapt a more entrepreneurial culture and learn more about how to become more nimble and, you know, innovative in the way that they do things. And so it's a mutually beneficial kind of arrangement where we try and just foster those engagements and make sure that everybody wins in the chain.
Okay. And how can more small businesses improve their prospects on raising investment and remaining sustainable?
Again, I think it's, you know, having a more holistic approach in everything that you do from the beginning. So you have to start with scale in mind. And obviously, you know, we always talk about access to finance and access to markets. I think, you know, and access to skills for us, you know, we feel that skills really does empower women in particular, but, you know, entrepreneurs generally to have more independence and more freedom and control of their lives. And so, it's really about doing the right things, you know, demonstrating that you are a viable business option, that you are solving a viable problem that could have a mass market appeal, or, you know, a good reflection on your balance sheet, your cash flow. And so these are things that obviously investors are looking for every time. You know, they want to show that, you know, you have done the work, you know who your target customers are, you've done the market research, you've engaged with them, you've really spent time getting to know your space and dominating that space.
The world of trade is diverse and ranges from things like baskets to complex machinery. What niche opportunities do you see for African women in trade? And are there specific opportunities for cross-border trade?
Yeah, I think the free trade agreement presents a massive opportunity, but as usual, you know, the policy and the culture needs to meet the vision, you know, so we do need to engage with policymakers. We need to find ways of kind of connecting as a group, a collective, to influence policy across the continent to make sure that we realize some of the background dynamics that maybe we don't see by reading all the headlines. We need to really try and figure out how we dismantle some of the structures that have been in place for centuries, you know. And so the opportunity that for Africa, I feel, is the fact that, you know, we can't compete with China on the mass market and mass production front, and that's absolutely fine. But we are Africans, you know, we have the heritage of being artisanal and working with our hands and doing things that could be, you know, more bespoke or niche in that regards. And so I think in terms of e-commerce and, you know, digital platforms to promote the fact that we offer something very different, very, very bespoke, and maybe more sustainable, puts Africa in a unique position to offer, you know, like you mentioned, baskets that are very unique in the way that they are produced and sustainable in the way that they are produced and sourced. And so I think that offers Africa a huge opportunity in terms of marketing and packaging ourselves as a brand and, you know, going back to our roots, really. That's really what we can offer.
Thank you. For me, I think it's looking at the woman, since it's Women International Month. But then daily, millions of women in Africa are engaged in one form of trade or another, either within their countries or across their national borders. They buy and sell everything from agricultural produce, as you mentioned, to manufacturing products. And it is mostly women who conduct cross-border trade, delivering goods and services. And this is reported by the World Bank. They also run the majority of agricultural small holdings. Indeed, women traders' contribution to national economies has become essential in boosting trade in Africa. However, trade policies in the region are not necessarily favorable to women because men have better access to resources. How do we create policies that are favorable to women in trade? And how do we ensure that these policies are implemented and accessible to them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a really well-documented problem. You know, women do engage informally and we engage in cross-border activity and trade, and that's really how it's been for time immemorial, you know. But I think the policy environment is difficult to penetrate if you don't advocate, if you don't kind of speak to the right people, if you don't have that voice. Then, you know, they look like, you know, interesting documents that never get implemented on the ground. And so I think it really is going beyond the policy documents and actually looking at implementation. There are a lot of policies to talk about gender equality. We know where we are with that. SDG number 5, we're a long way off from achieving that. And so I think it's really a matter of us being a bit more organized as women, as collective, to really make our voices heard and figure out how we can implement those policies. And I'm always advised to kind of, you know, look at how we can get more women into the public space, you know, in terms of implementing policy, as well as, you know, influencing policy. And so I think these are all ways that we can all have a say in what actually happens. You know, if you're going to sit down and not do much behind the scenes, then, you know, you're going to basically be a subject of whatever is, you know, handed down to you. And so I think we just need to encourage more people into those spaces of influence and also hold people to account for the stuff that they say they will do and don't quite get, you know, going.
I think now it takes me to my next question, which looks more into corporate spaces, especially the large corporate spaces. I mean, women are the major consumers in most sectors, such as textile, retail, and supermarkets. For outlets, yet we still find less women in strategic company management positions of the same industries. How can corporates, especially the large corporates, create healthy environments for women to not only grow, but to participate in these strategic leadership positions? And how do we ensure that their voices are not only muted, but they are also influential?
Training, awareness, you know, having policies within your organization that would make sure that, you know, gender is mainstreamed within your organization, your procurement, you know, your leadership team, all those things need to be very much designed and put at the forefront of everything that you do as an organization in terms of your culture and your policies and processes. So I think that's one. And obviously having more transparency about those things, you know, how many women do you have in meaningful roles or more senior roles, as opposed to just menial cleaning jobs, for example. Mm-hmm. So all these are things that we need to be tracking and be more, you know, sensitive about and more transparent about reporting against. And also, you know, improving the dialogue about the fact that, you know, gender is a tool for, you know, you to achieve an objective advantage. You know, it's the boards, you know, companies that have more representation of women do perform better. I mean, that's a fact. Mm-hmm. It's all the studies, McKinsey and Go, BCG, you know, they've all proven that the top companies that have, the companies that have women in their top jobs or have a good representation of women do perform better. And so that's a competitive advantage that everyone can take advantage of and find ways to make sure that happens. And, you know, I think, you know, personal development as well, you know, women need to connect and, you know, seek out mentors and have those relationships where you do talk about things beyond the handbags and the shoes. You know, we need to talk about business and how to, you know, how to influence your, you know, your team, your bosses, how to prove yourself and make sure that you are heard and get that kind of seat around the table, and how they've managed to do it. Those who are senior to you, how do you reach out to them? How do us, the people at the top, you know, in terms of women who have made it, how do they also give back? You know, there are all kinds of networks that we see across the continent and globally about, you know, senior women helping those who are coming up in the ranks. And so these are all things that we should do and see more of to ensure that women have more influence and, you know, can make changes where it matters.
Interesting. Thanks, Amma. As a woman with such a diverse background and great accomplishments, what challenges have you experienced providing the services that you do?
Oh, you know, I mean, I think it's always about, you know, when you're trying to do something that's not quite been done before or do things that are a little bit different, sometimes you do get pushback from the establishment. And so it's really trying to prove the model works. And sometimes that takes a longer time than you planned initially. So I think every day is a learning opportunity, and you just try and build your networks to get, you know, to get the partnerships and the resources that you need to grow your business. Of course, it's always a challenge managing family with your professional life. And so, again, being very mindful of what you are going through at any given time and, you know, asking for help. Sometimes, you know, we're not very good at asking for help. It's important for us to ask for support in our professional and personal lives, to build that support system around us to make sure that we do work at our optimum level.
Thanks, Amma. It's been a pleasure hosting you. And as we close Women's Month, we applaud you for choosing to challenge the limitations that have kept women back. Let's continue challenging the status quo. Thank you.
Thanks, ladies. Thanks, Amanda. Thank you.